to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make the Elm City tick. Nothing ticks better than Pundit Friday, which we're about to begin here in the WNHH studio with the number one pundits in the media universe. Pundits like the valorous and validating voice of vibification and vanquishes all vanity and vacillation. The pastor of parking ticket palpitation, the dairy-free goddess of our grassroots operation, the belle of our ball, managing editor of Inner City News, and host of WNHH Love Babs Love
like
Talk
that.
Program, Babs Rolls Ivy.
Hey, y'all!
We also have that illustrious incubator of Inside and Incision, the flyest news gatherer this side of Fleet Street, boss of the Budget Beat and the Beauty Beat, star New Haven independent reporter, Markeisha Ricks.
Happy Friday, people.
We have the bravest man in New Haven, unapologetic Donald Trump fan and WNHH studio manager, Harry Dross.
Hey.
And both Nora Rodriguez Reyes and our other buddy, Joe Ugly, are not around this week, but they will be back next week, we believe, especially if Joe gets the flight home from Germany. And we miss you guys, and we'll try to make the best without you. How's everybody doing?
Oh, we are good. It's happy Friday. Happy summer.
Happy Friday. Happy summer. You know, there was something about this past week in New Haven that there were all sorts of different parts of town. There were all sorts of plans on the table.
Have friends.
For overall good things to change that people are hoping will happen, ideas, projects. But in each case, people got together and found reasons not to be happy about the details. And there was the typical New Haven, not necessarily bad, picking at stuff and politics and questions raised. And in some cases, I was at one of these locations, but most of them, Markeisha Ricks happened to be in attendance writing about it for the New Haven Independent. And just like last night, Markeisha, you were at Martina's school right in Fairhaven. And forever, we've been wanting to clean up the mothballed power plant on the Island Ball Island right off Grand Avenue, the Mill River, United Illuminated's old building. They were just going to leave it there with PCBs. It used to be called the City 6, one of the City 6 most polluting factory power plants in the state. They weren't going to clean it up until Tony Harp got George Jepson, the Attorney General, to force a Spanish energy giant, Iberdrola, that's buying United Illuminating, to set aside the $30 million to clean it if they wanted approval to buy the electric company. So it looks like it's going to happen. And last night, the company came and told people in Fairhaven, hey, we're getting going. We're starting next month. So it's about to start, Markeisha. How'd it go?
It went. It was a fairly tame meeting. People had lots of questions. In particular, one woman there who is a parent as well as a teacher in a nearby Head Start. Was concerned. She heard, you know, what they had to say about how we're going to contain all the contaminants as we move them back and like off the site and move clean things onto the site and, you know, try to remediate asbestos in those buildings and whatever other crazy hazardous PCP materials that are over there and clean up the soil and the
did you say
water.
PCP or PCB?
I'm sorry, PCB. I hope I said PCB.
Yeah, it sounded like PCP to me, but I think I'd rather have that than the
PCB. PCB.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if I didn't, I meant PCB.
I probably just heard it wrong.
But, you know, she was really concerned about what happens if, you know, something gets airborne, if dry, contaminated dirt gets airborne, if that's going to come across the field, because John Martinez School is just across the soccer field.
I've stood in that field and looked at the plant, and it is right there. Sometimes we don't realize if you're driving, you go all the way around. But if you're standing in that field, you're right by the Mill River, and the island's right there. So I think that's not a if. I think that's probably a when, I'm guessing. Different kinds of
they
weather.
They seem, or dirt. UI, and I don't know if that's the traditional corporate line, which is they seem very confident about their ability to seal the site, to carry out different materials in sealed containers. Like, they have a whole strategy and plan for doing it, and they've hired a company, an environmental engineering company, to monitor them and check almost every step of the things that they're doing.
So what did the company say? This woman said, what's going to happen if the
kids
are playing soccer?
Well, what she asked very specifically was, how are you going to notify the community if there's some type of leak? If some of that contamination gets out for whatever reason, and, you know, I think they're thinking more like, oh, if there's a spill into the river or things like that. But her, she was at the very ground level that all of us would be concerned about, which is, what if there is a big dust storm and it just blows dirt from that place,
or just a cloud comes over,
or just a cloud or something like that? How are they going to notify the community? And, you know, the official had, you know, those official words about, oh, well, we have to notify the State Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, and we have all these other, but he couldn't confirm whether or not they're going to send these people an email or say, look, hey, stay inside your house, seal your doors, tape the stuff up.
Or do they even know someone at Martina's school whom they would call right away to notify the parent tree there?
Well, obviously they met in the school, and I think the city worked to work with the principal, but like, I don't know that they have a chain of this is how we would do this. That's so they said they would get back to them on that answer.
So that really shows the importance of public meetings.
Oh, absolutely.
When the public shows you what they care about, and then you can take care of business you might not have taken care of. And you were saying to me last night when we talked about this, Markeisha, this reminded you of a very similar meeting you were at recently in Cedar Hill, where there was a chemical factory there that had an explosion.
Absolutely.
And didn't let the neighbor know what was going on.
Yeah, and
so
people for hours didn't know, like, am I smelling something or getting, you know, inhaling something that is harmful to me? Like, they just didn't know for hours.
So there was a hearing this week, I guess, the Board of Alders, where they want to have new rules in place for how companies inform neighborhoods around them when there's an environmental problem or an explosion or some kind of threat to public health. So maybe they can include UI in this
one.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But then you also, someone else I saw in your article I was reading this morning, talked about if pollution gets in the river. So while they said in terms of the airborne threats, they're going to work on that, they said they're not going to work on the river threats.
They're not. The scope of their work is just for the Ball Island site, and it involves the cleaning up of the soil and the water that's contained on site, as well as the buildings on that site. But they don't have any plans to test water or any of that downstream that's affected by what's on that site.
So is anybody else gonna? Department of Energy?
I don't know. And I don't know if it would be up to the state's department to hold UI accountable to that as well.
Hmm. And then the other night you were at a city plan meeting where now we finally got our plans after all this time. It's been a long wait to build, I think, is it the state's largest protected cycle track, meaning you have a bike lane that has a barrier so cars can't go in and out of it all the way. Coming from Forest Road at the edge of Westville Flats up the hill, all the way downtown to Park Street. And they had to convince a lot of people along the way who worried about parking. They found these creative solutions to have it go up on a sidewalk for a part so people thought parking spaces by a coffee shop. And they got it approved. But before it was approved, there was one last group you wrote about that still doesn't like it. It kind of tapped into something larger. That's too bad Joe Ugly's not here because he always wants to tax bike riders. It seemed to still tap into something larger about some people in town who have this lingering resentment about bicyclists becoming part of the infrastructure.
Well, it appears, according to the Republican town committee chair, Jonathan Wharton, that Republicans in the neighborhood aren't too keen on the bike lane.
And there are Republicans still in that neighborhood.
There are.
Now, Jonathan himself is on the commission. He voted for it. He rides a bike.
He does. He's a very avid bike rider.
But so some people are upset when they comment on the Independent. Why are you going against everything? That's why Republicans get nowhere. How can you be possibly against a bike lane where people can be healthier and ride their bikes places?
They don't want healthy people. Are you kidding me?
And they said, well, you know, worried about it's going to look ugly with the striping and the
delineator tubes.
The delineator tubes, the rubber ducky thing.
And they're afraid that it's going to take down their property values, even though what Giovanni Zinn, our city engineer, said was that by and large, bike lanes and any type of infrastructure improvement for pedestrians actually benefits homeowners.
Because people want to, it's an inducement to want to buy a house with your family as opposed to an absentee landlord who could care less.
Yeah.
And we actually want people who want to live in their houses.
Yeah, who want to live in and use that infrastructure.
A lot of people say
we
like to come someplace where we can ride. It's like having parks. But you know what I was thinking? I was reading that. Of course, I'm like our readers who say, come on, this is the new century. You people are stuck in the past. How can you be against progress? Historically, the Republican Party in this city, as a minority, has raised questions about liberals' ideas that we all think sound great. And sometimes they end up being right, even though, like, they're coming from. Like, you know, when you raise questions about school integration, I still believe to this day a lot of that was racist, the opposition. But they still raise questions that end up being true about people that, you know, black parents eventually embrace sometimes about not wanting to have to leave their own neighborhood or feeling like the solution to educating my kid better is to have a white kid next to a black kid rather than just having better schools for everybody. They raised questions about urban renewal, and again, some of that wasn't motivated by good reasons in the 50s and 60s in New Haven, but there's no question they were overall right about the unintended consequences of tearing down so much housing and the inside deals for the business people who benefited from it, the property owners, and how we just got poorer, and we looked back at it and said government took action thinking it was going to help everybody, and it ended up way. So while I still believe this bike lane is a great thing, I can't wait till it's built. Maybe it'll even get me back on a bike again rather than walking everywhere.
I think
we should listen.
Oh, you'll have good walking, though, experience because they're going to fix that intersection of Winthrop and Edgewood.
I think about that every day when I cross it.
Yeah, because I'm always fearful of my life when I'm crossing
Winthrop
the street there
and
on a bike.
Edgewood.
Or because I saw today as I was coming here on the Q bus, a car that had been at the stop sign assumed that the bus was going to stop. while they were had been sitting at that stop sign. So the bus is actively approaching them. They pull out in front of the bus, and the bus almost hits them.
Well, Harry and Barris, when you hear about Republicans saying, these bicyclists, it's not your city. This car is supposed to ride. It's gonna make it a worse place to live. Our property values will go down. It's going to be ugly. What do you think when you hear that? Come on, Harry Joseph.
Resident conservative.
Let's get that Donald Trump feeling. Well, although Donald Trump probably likes bike lanes. He probably is into this whole building up urban features. He was kind of into that in New York, right?
I'm sure it raises his property.
I'm sure he likes to build things.
He would like to make money building anything, right?
No, not just make money. I thought he's like a city guy.
But, well, he's a city guy, but as long as he could build, he's happy, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, it would make his property values better. People walk to his hotels.
Here's the thing about that for me. I just think to myself, and I'm going to take on Joe's topic here about taxing bike riders. They're spending so much money accommodating bike riders. So bike riders should actually pay some type of tax.
But they do pay taxes.
No. Doesn't everybody pay taxes, Paul?
Yes.
But you want some people on some occasions to pay more taxes for the issues that you want. Well, bike riders should have to pay a little more.
But it's also for pedestrians. This isn't just for bike riders.
Paul, we're all pedestrians.
Right. So and this is to benefit pedestrians.
No, we're all pedestrians, but it's not benefiting all pedestrians.
Yeah, it is.
We don't all go bike riding.
No, but it's a pedestrian and bike trail.
I know, Paul, but all pedestrians will not be on that bike trail.
Not all pedestrians.
Well, not all car riders go on a certain road you build, well, Harry. That's why we have taxes that benefit everybody.
Let me tell you.
Good.
Well, let me throw this in here because, you know, two other kind of lost points that are lost on people who drive cars is that if you live in those neighborhoods, even if you own a car and have a driveway and all of those things, you know, your neighborhood experiences not so much the pressures of your driving and your neighbor's driving, but because of where Westville is, how close it is to Woodbridge, what we're getting is all those suburbanites coming in through our neighborhood to avoid Whaley Avenue.
And there were different hearings about this bike trail. So one was in Westville, where people tend to be more middle class, right? And they have a lot of people love biking, but then you have people have businesses and feel like we just like to be a park everywhere. But in Edgewood and Dwight, actually Troop School, where they're lower income, they said exactly what Markeisha said.
Yep.
They said, we've been asking the city for relief from all these speeding drivers that are going to run over our kids when we walk to school. So they are not bike riders, Harry, they're going to benefit from this. They see this as traffic
saying
calming.
That building a bike lane is going to stop somebody from speeding.
There's no question. It's going to be a narrow road. Narrow road.
Yeah, they're taking that road down to one lane for car traffic and one lane for bikes.
It doesn't matter for somebody who's speeding.
Absolutely, but at some point you're going to get stuck behind a bus.
It doesn't matter.
So you're not going to have any choice.
A wide two lane street versus a very narrow one.
You think they're speeding because it's wide?
There's no question. The studies have shown that. Psychologically,
if something's wide open,
you go.
I go up Edgewood and Dwight every morning. Right? We come up 313, and then we end up on Edgewood.
So this is your route.
This is my route. Okay, and I see people flying by those schools. It's like
that's the point,
and it has nothing to do with it being wide or anything. They could be right next to you, tight.
But the conventional wisdom, at least the conventional wisdom, Harry, people study stuff. Now, sometimes experts are wrong.
Yeah,
is that when
when
it's a narrower road, it goes more
and
slowly.
Not just narrow, like more things in the roadway.
Yeah.
So you have a whole bike lane that's going to be on that north side of Edgewood. You're basically going to be down to one lane.
And I'm not sure you're down to one lane, Markeisha. Are you? Maybe you are because they're worried about, like, for instance, trucks are going to have to double park and load stuff. So actually, one of our commenters, noteworthy, who lives in Upper Westville, he says this stinks because you have to think of the rights of people who want to drive more quickly to get where they're going. And this is going to frustrate people. And David Hartman talked about that with traffic calming, that sometimes the traffic calmers don't realize that frustrating drivers makes it worse, that you want to have the smoothest ride. You don't want them speeding, but you want to have, like, the way lights are badly timed on Whaley, it just frustrates you. And then you gun it up when you're frustrated, you move out, you go through the light. And that's why I'm saying we do always have to listen
to unintended
consequences.
Actually, the reason I'm taking Edgewood every morning is so I don't have to deal with the lights on Whaley.
So this is designed actually to push you back to Whaley Avenue. If you want to drive that way, you have to go back to Whaley Avenue,
right,
which is what the neighborhoods want.
It makes no sense.
They don't want
it. It does make
sense.
You still have an alternative route. You don't have to drive on Edgewood.
Babs,
and people would actually prefer if you didn't.
Can I get a witness here, Babs? How are you going to adjudicate this one?
I mean, I think we should have. I think we should be bike friendly. I mean, this city is friendly. We should be bike friendly. Yeah. Why couldn't we be bike friendly? Why can't bikes and cars coexist? Yeah. They can't.
And they should.
It's just about political will. No, I don't. Come on, really?
Yeah.
Harry loves the tax stuff. That's what these Republicans are like.
Oh, that's what they like. Except for their top 10%.
You know, a high percentage of bicyclists are poor, right? Because they can't afford cars. Yeah. Harry wants, and some of them are yuppies who would just prefer not to drive.
A lot of them are yuppies.
But if you really look in the city,
especially
a lot of
them
are immigrants.
Especially when you're trying to get a San Francisco feel for your city.
Right, Harry. So I know you have contempt for that, which I don't think is very nice. But Harry, if you really look at it, I always say this by helmets.
What's wrong with a San Francisco feel?
I know.
San Francisco is pretty nice out here.
It's a show against gay people. But anyway. But Harry.
Oh, we're doing that?
What?
That's
but
not
anyway,
what we're doing,
that's the whole
are
San
we?
San Francisco values. That was the whole in the Georgia runoff this week. Is the whole San Francisco values and Nancy Pelosi.
It's anyway, so funny.
But Harry, I agree.
Harry's
I
like, that's not what I
always
was doing.
Say that you look at helmets, and of course there are huge exceptions in both directions. But generally, the people with helmets are making a choice to ride, and they have the money. And the people without helmets are often don't have a lot of money, whether it's kids or whether it's immigrants, and they need it for transportation. But in any case, you really want to start registering and form a government bureaucracy and enforcement of bicycles to tax the owners of bicycles?
Yes. For those who are actually traveling on their bikes and clogging up the lanes and traffic.
We won't be clogging up the lanes because we have our own lanes. We even have our own signal lights. That's the other thing that's happening. We get our own signal lights.
The cars to clog up the street, man.
The cars?
Compared to a bicycle?
Let me tell you something. I drive next to bike riders every day.
But that's like two or three. It's not like
in their lane.
That I agree with. I agree with Harry on that one.
They don't know how to stay in their
lane. Both sides are terrible. The drivers are absolutely horrible, and the cyclists, for the most part, don't follow the rules.
They don't follow the rules.
But you know the drivers are absolutely crazy, which is the one main reason I don't bike anymore in New Haven is the drivers.
I think people are actually trying to kill you.
The drivers who are crazy. Not you guys who are swerving into our lane.
Both.
But you're in a whole car that's thousands of pounds, so you have the more ability to be like accurate.
I mean, police like just told me this.
When's the last time you've ridden a bike? It's kind of hard on these bumpy roads to stay like completely straight. Like, but if I'm gonna have my own lane, you don't have to worry about that.
I'm with Harry that it's both sides, although he's not admitting drivers. I mean, I've talked to police chiefs who come here from other cities. Said one guy from L.A. said there's no place he's seen in America where the drivers break more rules or are crazier than New Haven. But that doesn't change the fact
that bikes are, I wouldn't argue that bikes don't break rules.
I don't know if you've been
rules.
On a bicycle in New Haven, but the drivers,
they're trying to kill you.
They honk at you and scream at you for even riding your
bike. In the road,
they
even if you're not swerving or anything.
They want you to be on a sidewalk.
And they're creating these bike lanes that are taking up the right lane.
So why can't we share? Why can't cyclists have a lane?
Share.
Yeah, why can't cyclists have
How
a lane?
How about you guys go on the sidewalk?
Because
the sidewalk is for walking.
That runs over pedestrians.
It's inherent
Harry.
In its name.
That's what they should do. They should actually impede on the walkers and actually create a bike lane on the sidewalk.
Why?
This way, you're bothering the walkers.
Okay, Harry's doing a humor routine now. That's what he's doing like Joe.
Because this is what we're doing, right?
Harry, this is ridiculous.
We're choosing a certain group to bother.
It's not to bother. It's just a certain group to have rights as well as everybody else.
Yeah,
I know
sure.
What you think, Babs.
You know what? I
can't get you wrapped up on this, but can we remind people?
We're spending so much money on these bike lanes.
Is it so much money,
compared
though?
Compared to what we pay on cars? Compared to $1 billion
all
for the
money that we're trying to get together for cars, to have car infrastructure?
Saying,
are you serious?
We're going into deep debt in the state for highways over
I'm talking
and over.
About you, you know, us over here that we care so much, and we're taking away services from a lot of people right
this
now.
This is state money.
It doesn't matter.
Honey, if we took all the money in the Department of Transportation and did other stuff with it, anybody can make that argument.
I mean, this is a footnote,
you can
Harry.
Do this with everything,
this
right?
is a footnote of state and city money that goes to roads for cars. This isn't even, this doesn't even
register.
Yeah,
we earmark a lot of money that somehow gets used elsewhere, right?
Does
so
it?
We should actually grab that, some of this money.
We just whined
and
wheelie haven't even designed the whole thing.
Let's take care of people, Paul, not... You know, a lot of people don't.
Like
you
said, his compassionate conservative routine.
There's a lot of poor people who can't afford bikes, right?
Tax the poor conservatism.
Paul, there's a lot of people who can't afford bikes.
That's why we have a bike share program coming.
There's a lot of poor people who can't afford bikes.
Try it again.
How about
so now you
want to
put cyclists on the sidewalk and run them over with bikes instead of having them do
that? Now run them over. Create a lane. Create a lane for you guys.
Then we're gonna have to take that lane away. That's
and then
what
you
doing.
Have to stay in
That's
your lane and not run people
That's
over.
That's what we're doing. That's what this whole proposal is. We're creating a
no,
lane
you're
for you guys.
Creating a lane on the street.
Well,
you
still
gonna
have to
drivers.
Build it. You have to build it somewhere, Harry.
On the sidewalk.
You're gonna have to expand that sidewalk.
Sidewalks on the sidewalk.
You have to expand the sidewalk, and then you got your bike lane again.
No. Let me tell you something. If you expand the sidewalk by 3 feet, right? Not even 2 feet. And you throw you guys,
who's going to give us eminent domain over people's yards?
Wait, guess what, Harry? You've just described the bike lane. They're extending the sidewalk 2 feet.
If you expand the sidewalk.
Expanding it 2 feet for the bike
lane.
But
not in the street. Where they could actually swerve into the street. You stay.
We're not going to swerve in the street. We're going to have delineator tubes. You'll be fine.
They're going 2 feet out and creating a barrier.
They're creating a barrier where they're not going to swerve into the driver's lane?
Yeah. There won't be any swerving in the driver's lane.
Well, then that works.
That's the whole point of the cycle track. That's what's different from a bike lane.
Well, that works.
We'll be completely out of your way, Harry.
All right. So
that works for me.
We've now gotten over the last bastion of opposition to the new bike lanes.
If I don't have to actually wait.
That's and I see.
So Harry's about to be the biggest advocate. He's going to want protected bike lanes all over this city.
Yeah, we should. Because let me tell you, I see the green light. The green light has turned green. And by the time this bike rider moves out of my way, turned red.
Harry, this is even better. There's a whole light specifically for bikes. It'll tell the bikes when to go.
Wait, shouldn't it be the same light? Because wouldn't they be going in traffic if they're not?
They might give you in like some so that everybody knows who's supposed to go in. They'll have a light.
I think that's gonna screw it up. Because you know how lights
no,
go.
But Harry, you've just described what they're doing when you say what you want. You've described how they built it.
If they build it like that, but the lights
okay,
is going to
find something.
The lights is going to be a problem.
They're not going to have a lot of separate lights.
Because they never synchronize. And
that's
then if
true.
They're going to be a separate light, all of a sudden the bike's going to go and that light is going to be a mess.
Well, it works on High Street. There's already a bike light there.
And it works.
A bike signal light. And nobody's died yet.
Not yet, but they're still listening to Pundit Friday on WNHH Radio.
As long as they're not hitting crazy exchange.
Listen to Pundit Friday on WNHH Radio. You're home for community radio.
You converted me, Paul.
What?
You converted me. I'm for bikes. You still should pay taxes or a registration fee or something like that.
Okay, so I'm glad we have the high tax Trump.
If that's going to be your regular form of transportation and you're going to be on the roads and you're...
What if it's kids? We're talking about a lot of kids biking to school and stuff.
That's not going to happen. And then you're going to...
Why is it not going to happen? There's two schools along this bike route.
Let's see if it happens. I know you guys are trying to become San Francisco, but you're not.
San Francisco is nice, I hear.
No, we're in New Haven. WNHH Radio. You're home for Community Radio New Haven at 103.5 FM. Live streams at newhavenindependent.org. And we're here on Pundit Friday. And Babs, you are unusually quiet on this one. This just doesn't get you going.
No, it doesn't. I don't really.
Does the skating rink get you going? Because Markeisha was there too. They finally came up with a cool plan for the skating rink.
Year round.
They're
right?
actually going to make it bigger. It's going to be year round. It's going to have stuff like volleyball. It's going to have all new equipment. They're going to redo the ice floor. They're going to expand it from 180 feet by another 85 feet. And they, they're going to have bio swale and bike spaces back on Harry's San Francisco theme. I'm sorry to inform you, Harry, that they're going to like not pollute, but have some of the water run off into a bio swale. And they were losing $50,000 to $60,000 a year. They come with a plan rather than having less skating, losing money. They're going to try to make it better for the public. So, Markeisha, was everybody happy about this? I was reading the comments to your story. What do you think?
Oh, I haven't seen the comments.
I think everybody was against it. I couldn't figure out why.
Why
they were against it?
Well, they're mad that they're going to be closed another winter. They find alternative places for people to skate while they're fixing it because they have to do this big redo.
Yeah.
So then they're mad that like they don't trust that the city came up with the plans and who they're going to pick to build it. And somebody else said bring professional hockey in there, which has failed 3 or 4 times at last count. New Haven at bigger arenas.
But why would they? I mean, you could go to Yale Whale and watch hockey.
Yeah, that's true. That's so true.
I mean, my kids have gone to Yale Whale and watched hockey.
I mean, obviously it is really good. We have great commenters who come up with some really interesting points you never think of. I'm going to bring one up.
Do they go to public hearings and do that, or they just save it all for the New Haven Independent?
And I'm glad they do it, but I think the big picture is we're kind of glad we're going to get a better skating
thing. Yeah, that seems to be the point.
We shouldn't lose taxpayer money on it.
Yeah.
That's the one next to the Corsair, right? Because all the Corsair people
are in there. That's right. You can have this whole new you have this whole new building with hundreds of people, young people.
Yeah, who might want to go skate.
People love skating. So I guess the bottom line is people just really care about the skating. They really care about it.
Which is great, and I hope when it is open again that people will support it.
Yeah, because they use it for basketball in the summer, right? You could go.
Yeah, and so they're going to still be able to do that. So it'll get all year round.
Talking transposition. I was at a hearing this week about the usual fights between Yale and the Alders who run the Board of Alders who are affiliated with Yale's unions. And they're fighting about a bunch of stuff, and it was pretty interesting. But one of the things they're talking about is the Alders had forced Yale, in addition to continue getting approval for how they park and any kind of building plans, to offer their employees who drive to work a 50% discount on Connecticut Transit if they switch. So Yale identified 3,300 workers who have been for at least 3 months parking in their lots. And they said, we will now let you ride the Connecticut Trans bus for 50% off.
Why can't they just free up their riders, their employees to ride for free? How much would that cost?
I love that. In any case, let me tell you how many people responded. 3,300 were asked. Five people took up the offer to switch.
Well, so is it reliable transportation?
Well, they were here all the theories about why. The author said, how much did you tell them? You know, did you even tell them about it? And they said, we actually emailed a bunch of times, made it through newsletters, blah, blah. Somebody else said, well, you give them tons of email all the time. You got to try other methods too. Somebody else said, well, these people who are choosing to drive, they want to drive. So just give them free parking and solve the problem that way. Somebody else said, Babs said, Connecticut transit system stinks because Yale has its own private system. There's not enough demand. I always say, why don't you do what Cornell does in Ithaca and pay for everyone to ride free on the public bus so there's enough demand that they can run more routes so you can actually rely on taking the bus to work, which you can't now. Other people say acknowledge reality. People want to drive. And again, pay them to park for free in the lots, even though it's going to pollute things. Other people say try harder to reach them. And other people say expand the Yale shuttle, have it go to the west side of town. It's so weird it doesn't. So if you live in west side of Yale, there are people I know who want to commute from our neighborhood, Markeisha, and Westville.
Why can't they just do all those things?
Well, if you both do the shuttle and Connecticut Transit, you're working at cross purposes.
Because they're going to choose the shuttle, right?
Yeah. It's your private valet service. You're still not going to have enough rider in Connecticut Transit. So even if it's free, it's going to be the free at the shuttle too. Why are you going to bother with Yale Transit?
I think they can expand the Connecticut Transit. I think they could make free parking for their employees. And I think they can,
they
cut
do
back
get a lot
some
of discounts
of their...
on the parking, like 50, 60%. And people say at this hearing, they were saying, and Marquis did this amazing story. You'll see the video is re-embedded in the story this week, where she went out in the hill with these people who live on streets near the hospital in the Yale Medical Center, who... An old person goes out in the morning, they said ShopRite, comes back, and all the Yale employees have parked on the streets taking the spots, even though there are company lots right nearby. And what everyone agrees
is people
you'll
just never
want
be able
free.
To compete with free.
So that's what Babs is saying. Just make it free. Yeah. That's what Jeanette Wilson is saying, the alder in Dixwell. Just
make that
it
part
free.
Of your employment package, much like health benefits.
I mean, it's asking a lot. It's asking
and
you
I was
to
gonna
spend
say,
millions
I, but I don't think that
dollars.
There's much any university that doesn't charge its employees for parking.
Well, they could be the first ones to.
I mean,
do something they could, innovative.
But I don't think it's a common practice.
Because when I, you know what, I had to take my son over to Yale for some testing, and I just thought, I'll just park at a metered spot or whatever. And do you know, it took me forever to find some place to park because there were so many cars, and these are in front of residential.
Right. So old people come home with groceries or something; they can't even park anywhere near their
house. I would just be pissed off. I really would be incensed by that.
What does Harry Droz, the sometimes tax the poor bike riders, think about this?
I think everything should be free.
Wait a second. You said we got tax bicycles.
Except for bicycles.
Okay, that was very Joe Ugly of you. He would be proud.
No, but I think everything should be free. Actually, this morning, my wife and I had the same discussion in the car about, Connecticut Transit and the bus. I was waiting for a bus to actually get out the way, right? And I see the guy who's wants to get on the bus, but he's negotiating with the bus driver. And I know a lot of people don't have the money, right? So or they don't have change. They go in and they have a $5 bill and they can't get on the bus, but they got to get to work, right? And I'm thinking to myself, okay, if this guy really needs to get on the bus, shouldn't he be allowed on the bus even if he doesn't have the money? Shouldn't it all be free?
You're going to pay taxes to support that?
Well, aren't we paying taxes to run this system in the first place? And then we get double taxed by having to pay the fare on the...
On Saturday night. So one thing I try to do just to see if it could be done is go out at night in New Haven, take a bus home, which nobody does because it's so rare at that time of night. So the route that goes near my house like stops at like 6 or 7, of course, because they think New Haven stops at 6 or 7. But I got the B bus at right before midnight, on late Saturday night, right before midnight. And we're going down Whaley Avenue to past the Boulevard, and people are smelling something. Saying, what's that smell? What's that smell? So the driver stops, and it's leaking hydraulic fluid in the back.
Oh, my God.
So everybody's off the bus at midnight, or 12:10, and there's not another bus for an hour. So, and that's
at 12:10?
Yeah, that's like the last, well, hour from when the last one left. So it's under an hour, but you know, you have to wait quite a while. So we all, like, I just walked last. I didn't mind because I actually wanted to walk the 2.5 miles home. And I thought it's a little much of time of night. So maybe, so actually I got to walk my 1.25 miles home. So it was fine for me. But I was just thinking, and they wrote back and they had, you know, they said we got someone in 36 minutes, another bus, but it's too late that time of night. They just don't have the volume of buses on the road. And I think it's because Connecticut Transit is a system of last resort for riders rather than of choice. Like a lot of people love taking the bus in cities and not have to have a car. But it is so inconvenient here. The routes are so crazy. The city is working on a study to change the routes for the state. I mean, it's based on a system where jobs used to be at different places, and New Haven didn't have things to do at night, and jobs didn't take place at night, and they weren't in the suburbs. They was on the spoke to the city. And now you only take the bus if you have no other choice, as opposed to wanting to take it because you can't rely on it.
See, I wish, like, I wish buses would run. I think there has to be a route change because where I live in Beaver Hill, right? I live like right in the middle. So there's the closest bus to me I'd have to get on Whaley or, I mean, Gulf Terrace. That's the closest to me. So that's like maybe 5, 6, 10 blocks away or something. And then there's no bus on Crescent, like by Southern. So there's no, so if I wanted to catch the bus over there, I'd either have to go down by Southern or Dixwell. That's the closest.
Yeah, I was talking to someone from Southern who's a professor, lives in Ansonia. She tried to take the bus. It's like 3 hours if you're lucky. Go 7 miles.
Well, that's the thing.
And if you time that wrong, you just have no other option.
They're late, which they often are.
Yeah.
And they're not perfect.
Well, that's the thing. Or they're early sometimes. And you're like, really? You're never early.
With the service that they give now, it should be free.
He said it's not good enough to be paid for.
I asked the DOT, is there a refund for people in your bus breaks down in the middle of the night?
You have 24-hour service in New York. You know you're going to catch a bus. You know you could get a job in Queens Plaza and make it home at 4 in the morning if you shift.
Right, and we talk to people who live in West Haven, you know, and a lot of people have, you know, like service jobs. They work at stores. She goes to a job at off 91 at the circuitry, where you know where Circuit City is, Universal Drive. She just can't take a bus on the weekend. It's like 3 hours off and when it's not the weekend. And she just can't do it on West Haven to get to her job in North Haven. And you know, it isn't that big an area, folks. So I asked the DOT, so, you know, people are stranded at midnight. Do you get and it's $1.75 for a ride. And now DOT subsidizes the ride. It's a vicious circle. You know, I think 40% or more for the bus riders, but they give them such lousy service. So then two of them take us, then you have to subsidize them more because you don't get the ridership. He said they don't give you a refund when the bus breaks and you're stranded. They'll give you a transfer if, like, an hour later they get you another bus and you have to connect somewhere else, which, of course, at that time of night, the buses don't run anymore. I mean, fundamentally, they don't feel they have to lure the customers or treat them right.
Because they're not interested.
They're holding the few people hostage who have no other choice.
They're not interested in creating a transit system that gets cars off the road. They're not thinking.
No, except for trains for rich people in Fairfield County.
Well, yeah.
I've lost count. It's at least a dozen press conferences here in New Haven with the governor's DOT person about improving train service for millions and millions and millions of dollars, and never one about the buses. We had to fight him like hell to get, like, for years, mm-hmm. just to get GPS to let you know when the buses are running late, which they didn't even publicize when it came out. So I think they just fundamentally don't care because of who they think rides the bus. And who rides the buses because the service is so big.
Because a lot of people would ride the bus if it was consistent, if it was just consistent and more. Yeah. I think, I mean, I know, I when I go to other cities, I look forward to riding
the bus. I love trans in other cities. It's fun.
New York City, I never think to drive. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just not even in my head.
I take the bus in Philly. I take
bus,
it in New York.
Subway or I hail a cab.
When I moved to Connecticut, I didn't have a car or anything. We used to walk all over the place, mm-hmm. but and take the bus. And I was trying to find a job, and your options are limited,
yeah.
because certain buses don't go to certain places, mm-hmm. or they stop running at a certain time, and you can't make it back home.
I wonder if this is all going to be moot in a few years with self-driving cars where you don't buy a car, and if Google can get the price down so it's like an Uber or Uber so that it's not $10 to go a few miles, but then get it comparable to what you pay for the bus. I wonder if this is all going to be moot at some point.
I think
people are definitely talking about that, and I believe the legislature passed some legislation to allow some testing here in the state for self-driving cars.
It's the poor people who are always affected.
Well, the question
is, they're still stuck with the bad buses.
Can you get it to the rate where it's the same as what a bus costs now? Can you get it to $1.75
if you do multiple riders?
Or subsidize it?
Yeah, if it's like a ride sharing program or something like that.
Or
maybe.
If you maybe give a contract to a private company that's going to run the service and then have a subsidy for the lower income commuters.
Look, it's just like the healthcare, right? A subsidy doesn't help you if you can't afford it and you're waiting for the subsidy to kick in.
What if you say a pass to go free all the time on the self-driving car?
You could do that, right?
Would that be like a single payer?
Everything should be free.
Well, wouldn't it be like single payer? I prefer single payer, but if you're going to let a company make a lot more, this is more of the Republican idea. You know, if you can make a private company run it because government doesn't have the money and you believe they could do it better, which is very doubtful, but if you believe that, if they're going to make so much money, you can require for the right to make that money that you allow poor people to ride free. But then you have to regulate to make sure they don't take advantage of them.
The problem with it is that, and it's a fact, you know, government is inefficient, right?
Wait a second. Private health insurance companies, are they efficient?
I got a $439 bill from two years ago that says no.
Vicious, inefficient, incompetent, cruel, companies, bureaucracies in the world.
Yeah, but the healthcare companies have been allowed to do this by our government regulations, right?
Republicans who don't let them be regulated, yes.
It's not cut the budget for regulation. Paul, it was Obama who made deals
with
these companies.
Because we would have done single payer if not for the Republicans who said the only way you'll ever pass something is have this
Paul,
idea.
Paul, you know you could have passed single payer. You passed Obamacare.
No, but it wasn't single payer because Joe Lieberman and his Republican buddy stopped it.
That's a lie. Because
Medicare for all. He said, I like the idea. Those people like it who I don't like, so we're going to kill it.
Our Republican buddies didn't like Obamacare and it still went through.
It was a Republican plan, you Obamacare. Guys, Mitt Romney, as governor of Massachusetts, started Obamacare.
You could keep moving the goalposts, but the fact is, the Democrats were the ones, there was not one Republican vote. Obamacare was passed just by the Democrats. So the Democrats who passed Obamacare hit it just as easily passed single payer. But you know what? Democrats were against single payer.
Right. So insurance company has too many clause in both parties. We need single payer.
Absolutely. On both sides, the insurance companies.
So are you for single payer?
I'm not for single payer. Well, if you can make it work financially, but you can't. Look at Obamacare.
You take out the cost of profit. You take out the cost, the incentives to deny people care.
And you
care.
Make the doctors work for the government, mm-hmm. so the doctors will become
a
government position.
There are two models.
Right? So the doctors
there are two models.
Will never be able to afford the education.
Medicare, they don't work for the government. Medicare is single payer.
Medicare is dying.
I'm saying, Harry, there are two models of single payer. Now, first of
all. Yeah, but everybody goes, well, look at the veterans. Yeah. The way we work with the veterans, that works. No, it doesn't work.
It depends on which measures. Some don't
look
work.
Look at Medicare.
Some does work.
It works for my mother who has early onset dementia. Thank you very much.
I'm not saying it doesn't work that people don't work. I'm talking about financially.
Yeah.
It never works.
You always need to tweak it.
Because government is inefficient.
And
something that would cost in a private setting a certain amount.
You're
for the government costs triple that amount.
WNHH.
Where it costs even more.
I don't think government is inefficient.
And plus, in the healthcare industry, the private companies for medicine, when they're unregulated, and what they charge for healthcare goes through the roof. Hmm. It's actually cheaper through government.
No, it's not. You're saying it's cheaper for the people, while the government keeps going into debt, into greater debt.
The question is, you have a good point about doctors. You have to pay to train the doctors. You have to do what England does. You have to do what Canada does, where they make a lot of money, but they're not so much richer than everybody else. That's the solution.
A socialist.
Yeah, for healthcare
point
should be
view.
Socialist.
But so you're saying the doctors shouldn't have any aspirations of being specialists and actually being rich
in
their
field. They can be rich, but they don't have to be making $3 million a year.
You get to decide what a doctor gets to
make. That's true, reimbursement. Right now, insurance companies decide what doctors can make. Insurance companies decide now.
We should.
Yeah, but here's the thing for me. We never use that argument for school teachers.
Right.
We never use this argument for the doorman. We never use this argument for the garbage pickers.
Yeah.
We want to keep them at some rate that is, you know, not above what we think their stature is.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have that conversation with poor people. Well, that conversation only applies to rich people.
That's right.
And I sit with dual degrees. So I know what I'm talking about.
But we do have that conversation on Pundit Friday on WNHH Radio, your home for community radio at 103.5 FM, live stream to newhavenandpenn.org. We're talking about the stories
being,
of the
being
week.
Being a doctor is a specialized
I'm
right
not saying they
job,
don't make
right?
more
it's
for the
not,
education.
So it's collecting it's not, garbage. I can't do it.
No, but wait a second. You could pay more
a doctor and a garbage collector are not the same.
Why?
They'll never
Why?
Be the same.
I bet you a doctor would pay quite a lot. Exactly.
I tell you what, if your garbage ain't picked up, you're not going to call your doctor.
And also, Babs, it's a middle ground.
Makes no sense.
You can have someone get paid more for jobs that require extra expertise and extra experience or education, but it doesn't have to be at the variables it is now.
So then the government has to recruit
That's
doctors.
Not even my argument, because people can make whatever we... Because, listen, all of this is about what we say we
Something
want to
bad,
see
yeah.
happen. What happens for me, what I believe is... We only have these kinds of arguments at that level for rich people, for doctors and lawyers, because we say they're specialized, whatever. But when we want to talk about minimum wage and raising minimum wage, somehow or other, the conversation becomes quite distasteful for people. That somehow or other, $16, $20, $30 an hour is some outrageous amount. But we have no problem saying if you run a sports team or run a UConn sports
or
team.
Or a hedge fund that gives nothing productive to the economy and puts people out of work.
The sky is the limit, you know, because that's specialized. The coach of the UConn boys basketball team makes more money than the governor. And everybody's cool with that because why? Because the team is winning.
I'm not cool with that.
I'm not cool with it either.
But I was cool with all the love.
I'm not cool with it either.
I was cool with all that was showered, this love that was showered on some people leaving town after making a great impact on it this week. Dorsey
Kendrick. It was a farewell tour this
18 years. Boy, she was a hero
yes.
in New Haven.
She took
Gateway,
her.
A struggling campus, into what everyone acknowledges the jewel of the community college system. Besides the big downtown campus, she started for people who are working in factories mid-career. She realized they can get trained if they have night courses, so she did night courses. There was a nursing shortage. She barreled through bureaucracy to create a nursing training program that's very successful. She just has cared about community college education, and P100 showed up at Anthony's this week on Morris Cove to wish her goodbye, and we all wish her the best and thank her. I'm not always sad when these people go. I feel like I'm so glad we got so many great years out of them, and I'm happy they're going to do something else, and 18 years is a good run. Mary Lou Oleski ran the International Festival of Arts Ideas for 11 years, and we had her and her husband, Peter Webster, who many people didn't know is her husband, who's very quietly behind the scenes, you know, follows his wife to every city she goes to, and he's actually a pretty hotshot opera trainer himself. He trains opera singers and stuff like that, but he just fell in love with New Haven as she did and got so involved with Worcester Square and city stuff. He got to know the cops. He got to know people trying to fix problems in the neighborhood. He would just take on his role to promote people he thought doing great work, like Creco, the pencil artist in the Hills Museum, and make sure everyone found out about him and get him money to do programs with kids to bring him to the museum and draw about their neighborhoods. And I just love what they brought. But we also welcome new people this week. First, we have a new police chief. Marquise, you were there where they jammed City Hall.
Jammed.
For the swearing in, well, the official swearing in, even the Lee one was a couple weeks ago in private, of our 17th police chief.
What are you doing here, Paul?
Anthony Campbell. And, you know, he's our first chief out of the last four to actually come up through the ranks in New Haven. I was talking to one officer about this the other day. He said that in some ways, having an outsider come in frees you from politics, like James Lewis, to make changes that are hard to make. But sometimes with the other two, they don't really know the people in town to support them to do good work, and they end up playing politics too much rather than being respected from the rank and file. What was your feel, Marquise, at this event about having it be someone who has spent almost 20 years as a New Haven cop, settles here, lives here with his family, and worked his way up through the ranks?
I got a sense that there was a real sense of pride on behalf of community members, public officials, but also the rank and file. Like that means something to them. And somebody said to me the other day that his appointment felt like appointing somebody who is committed to this community, so they feel like a person you can touch. They're not somebody who is from the outside and so doesn't have that sense of connection with people. And so, you know, people feel very connected to Anthony Campbell. They feel like he's one of them, because I think when you're not born in New Haven, sometimes you can feel like an outsider. Like people are like, you ain't been here long enough to claim that kind of status. But he's been here long enough that people feel like he's somebody that they're connected to, that he can be touched. He's not this insular individual who's not of the culture, and if you will.
As interim chief, he's in the last few months, he spends a lot of time out of the department. Some people feel like you need to be in your office a lot. People need to see, you need to manage from within. Other people feel it's important to be out in the community. I know it's not one or the other. He definitely spends a lot of time running around the city and getting together with people. I was wondering how, if it's significant at all, he's the second African-American chief. Is it maybe we don't, it's not a big deal anymore? Because obviously one thing about Anthony Campbell is his support in the department cut across the racial lines. So this wasn't an issue. I mean, I know Boise Kimber had an event that made it worse for him, trying to say we care the black community that he gets named. But in fact, that wasn't a big black community thing. That within the department, he actually was seen as a healer, did very well with the white-led union. People see him as a cop's cop. Not everybody was for him. They never all for anyone, but it had nothing to do with racial lines. But on the other hand, there is racial pride, right? You had one of your many, you had wonderful photos from that event. You really captured the event and all the aspects of it. And it wasn't that most people there were black. But is there some special black pride? You had one photo I noticed with the police chiefs of Danbury, Waterbury, and Yale, who are all African American. And again, other law enforcement people come to who are white who work with them. The U.S. Attorney's Office loves working with them. They were there, and they're not mostly people of color except for Stacey Spell. What was your sense of significance in taking that picture?
I think it was that kind of we made it to this special club that maybe it's very difficult for people who look like us to make it to. And I actually had taken a picture that I didn't get a chance to run, which was a picture of Chief Higgins, who's over Yale University's police department.
He's African American.
Our new fire chief, as well as Anthony Campbell. So like three of the top public safety officials in this city are African American, and that's a huge milestone.
And they're male. And one rap that Tony Harp, the mayor, gets from African American males in town is that she hasn't promoted enough African American males. Chief administrative officer, police chief, fire chief. I think that's kind of a bum rap. I don't know. What do you think?
I feel like I have to represent for Norma.
I was just about to jump in there. I was going to jump in there
because like
we do have two assistant chiefs who are Hispanic.
The chief of staff is Hispanic of the mayoral office.
Oh, so we have to be assistants?
No, because if they decide to stay on when Anthony Campbell decides to leave, right, I fully expect that Tony Reyes could be chief one day.
That's it. I was just, you know, shout out to Norma.
It's okay. Harry
Yay, Drost, Norma.
We always love the way Harry Drost speaks up for the point of view you're not going to otherwise hear. Tax bicycles, love Donald Trump. So quick, name me the 8 sister cities New Haven has.
Oh, God.
Because 8, as of yesterday, we have 8. It used to be 7.
Sister Leon.
Boom. Way to go.
That's not that one. And the new one that I can't pronounce.
Is it Nicaragua?
Yeah, Leon is
there's
Nicaragua.
A new one from China.
New one as of yesterday.
I don't know them all.
We have a sister city of Changsha.
Okay.
Welcome, China. We love to be friends.
Call me when there's a trip.
Okay. Amalfi, Italy.
Ooh, Amalfi, I didn't know that. Really?
Freetown, Sierra Leone. Well, Amalfi's obvious because so many people, there are more Amalfitanos in this area than living in Amalfi.
Really? I didn't know that.
They were recruited here by Yale as expert stone cutters in the Depression to build most of the residential colleges.
Oh.
And they were around Worcester Square and then the suburbs. And we had, I think, the biggest population ever in the country. And I think at one point there were 3 times as many Amalfitanos. I've been to Amalfi, which is heaven.
I hear it's beautiful.
Seaside,
oh, let's go there.
And all the last names on the doors, I thought I was still working because all the people I didn't
know. You recognize all the last names?
They were the actual families. Oh. I'd go by the doors, Toledo, Carano, Fusco. It was great.
Like, I know so these people. Cool.
Yeah. I was like, I know your cousin.
And St. Andrew's Church, of which ours is playing. I think they might be the ones having the festival this weekend. It is the most beautiful church I've ever seen.
Wow.
Avignon, France. Afula, Gaboa, Israel.
Go there. We should go to all the sister cities.
Way, Vietnam. Yes, City City Tour. And the second most recent one, San Francisco, Tetlanachan. I can't say it right. Slaca, Mexico.
We do need all right, Norman here. A sister city tier. Let's go.
Yeah, we should just do a whole tour.
Just do a tour. Sister city tour.
Well, sister love from us here at WNHH Radio, Pundit Friday.
You would like communist China, wouldn't you?
Are they really communist? If they were less capitalist, I think they'd be in a
better
shape.
I guess we
shape.
Just have to keep beating up Cuba for the likes of these GOP.
Thank Lord you for joining us today on Dateline New Haven.
Gotta go back to flying to Canada to get to Cuba.
Marquisha Ricks and Harry Drost, the bravest man in New Haven. Next week, we'll be back to listing all the titles of Joe Ugly. We miss you, Joe. Hope you're having a great trip in Germany. Norma Rodriguez Reyes. Sorry you couldn't make it today, but you have us back next week, and we're going to love mixing it up together. Right now, we're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. Now, we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book your flight and fly free with us all weekend long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.